This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the long and winding railroad. This is episode number 49. So we're gonna hit the big 50 in next episode, whenever that might be. I'm hoping it'll be soon, because we're the guest I have has picked a match that has an anniversary coming up, and the guest also said he's known for this match, like for seeing this match live. Some people might know who I'm talking about, but I'm not going to say. He's got to save the surprise. But he said, with me, it's the last time he will ever talk about this match. That's next episode, not this episode. This episode is very special as well, because we have returning to post-wrestling. Well, not really. He's always here. It's my good friend from MCU Later, my co-host, the man with the plan, the Rich Fan. There's some alliteration and some rhyming there. How are you doing, Rich?
I am alive. I am surviving. I am doing well. And I am looking forward to talking about this, one of my favorite matches in all Japan's storied history.
That's correct. It's an interesting match. One thing I'd like to go into with you is the booking of not only this match, and just so people know, it's a title match. It's for the Triple Crown. But this particular Triple Crown reign, and the person who is the Triple Crown champion at the time, who should we say? I guess we should just say it.
Well, first defense as well.
It's his first defense of his first ever title reign. It's Toshiaki Kawada, Dangerous K himself. Shout out to Bruce Lord for wearing a Toshiaki Kawada t-shirt at All Out here in Toronto, as of this recording, which was just a couple of days ago. And I've yet to recover mentally, physically. Exhausting, because Tony's got to book 17 hours to counter program someone he doesn't need to counter program against. Just saying, might want to shorten those shows, bro. And let me get. I mean, the good thing about him changing the start time is I didn't have to like get home at 1 in the morning. You know what I mean? I got home at like maybe 10 p.m. Nice. Toronto time, and which is nice. Like, got to have some sushi afterwards with Mike Murray and his lovely daughter Nora, who, you know, the three of us went to the show together. Can I just tell you, there was no merch to be had, worthwhile to be had at another AEW show I've attended live.
Streak continues.
What the fuck? You know, I'm just gonna get this all off my chest because I don't really cover AEW. Mm-hmm. But one, show's too long, plus a 1 hour pre-show, fuck you on that as well. Three matches I would have cut. Should okay. I tell you what matches I think they should have cut? All right, Eddie versus Big Bill. I love Eddie Kingston, but really that didn't need to be on this show. Okay, Hurt Syndicate versus Ricochet and his guys, whatever the fuck they're called. I don't follow
Vision. No, wait, wrong company.
I don't know what they're called, because I don't follow the Gates of Agony. It was agonizing to have to watch this match. That being said, Ricochet sold really well for both Shelton and Bobby. MVP, I love MVP as a manager. He doesn't need to be in the ring anymore. Just saying that. MJF versus Mark Briscoe. Liked it. The work was good. I thought a really good story. Didn't need to be on the show. Those are the three I would have cut. You would have saved about an hour and 20 minutes right there. And then I would have kept everything else. Kept the women's matches. I would have kept the tag. My favorite match was the ladder tag match. Thought that was really good. Except for Jurassic Express reuniting. Jack Perry just like...
Yeah, he's falling, Jungle Man now.
Falling backwards in terms of his booking. Love to see it. Or maybe not, unless you're CM Punk or me. tells you what I think about Jack Perry.
His glasses.
Tells you what I think about Jack Perry and Luchasaurus. I guess he's not Killswitch anymore, huh? He's now back to being Luchasaurus. That's what you call regression in terms of your character development, friends. Regression. Anyways, overall though, outside of like the length of it, not a bad show. I don't know if I'm sure you and Wade Keller have already talked about All Out, but as someone who was there live, my friend, I think this might be my last ever live experience. I don't want to spend the money for a show that I just feel like I'm like gonna almost sleeping through the main event. I almost passed out before the main event started because I was just like, one, the tag match was really good. The ladder match was really good. You peaked there. And then I don't know. I'm exhausted. Huh?
What did you think of the three-way?
That was my washroom break match. So I watched it on TV. So I have to get to watch it in full, which I will. I'll watch it in full on TV. But from what I saw, it looked pretty good. I like the booking of it. Like, what was it? Máscara Dorada looked great. You know, pretty much try to shut everyone up as, why is this guy in this match? And then he showed why he's in this match, because he's pretty fucking awesome worker. But anyways, there you go. A little bit bonus for fans of the, you know,
the long and winding sickos.
That's right. And then, that's right. Can I just say, I've never seen a man as big as Brody King bounce off a ladder. That was pretty impressive. That might have been my favorite spot, is him just doing the pile driver and then bouncing up and down on that thing and just breaking it on the second try on his relanding. Anyways, shout out to all the people who came out to all Poison Rana tailgate at Gabby's. Good to see everyone there. Eric Marcotte, Bruce Lord in person, got to see them. Everyone else,
tall legend.
To the gentleman who came up to me and said he really likes MCU Later. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I did not get your name, but we'll put you over. Not only if you're listening to this, I just put you over on the show. If you want, please let me know. If you're listening, go to the forum and tell us who you are. And unless I've already made fun of you and I didn't know it, we'll put you over. Okay.
Nice.
It's the best I can do, right, Rich? It's the best.
Oh, you got to. You do what you do.
So let's talk about this match. We're talking about Toshiaki Kawada defending his newly won Triple Crown, which he won from one Dr. Death, Steve Williams, a man that he legitimately hated, apparently, and that Steve Williams legitimately hated Toshiaki Kawada. Got along with everyone else in the company. Him and Kawada just hated each other, but they worked really well together.
Sometimes this happens, though.
Hey, you know what? There you go. There's good chemistry. But Toshiaki Kawada, yes, he won the belt from Steve Williams on October 22nd, 1994. And this match is from January 19th, 1995. And he is defending the Triple Crown against one Orange Crush, Kenta Kobashi. I don't think this is his first ever title challenge. This is like, he won't win the Triple Crown till like, I think, 2 years later. Let me see if I have my my notes here. Kenta Kobashi's first ever Triple Crown will be in 1997, so he's got about 2 years away from actually winning the title. So this is one of his many challenges. He'll be challenging Kawada, Misawa, of course, probably Stan Hansen. I'm sure Stan Hansen probably murdered him in that match, as he is wont to do to young Kenta Kobashi at this point in his career. But this is from Osaka, the Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium. If I didn't say the date, it's January 19th, 1995. It's part of the New Year Giant Series Tour. This is day 14. And at the Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium, they're listed attendance with 5,600 people. And I kind of want to go through this this card, the undercard.
Before you get to the card, though,
yes.
There's something I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things, and I was really appreciative that we picked this match, is in addition to that being during the series, this was also after one of the most traumatic earthquakes in Japan's history at that time, the Hanshin earthquake that was on the 17th.
I blanked out about the real life kind of historical context, but that's good to know.
The only reason I brought that up is because it was like a 7.0 on the Richter scale. Tons of folks died. And one of the things I heard through the years, through like message boards and things, was that Baba changed his booking to give the fans the draw as a show, because he had originally planned for something, just a regular V1 defense. And with the what's the right word? I apologize. I'm stumbling over my words. With the devastation, because if you look at the pictures, it is absolutely
horrible. This is the one that was in Kobe, right? That was the epicenter. This earthquake.
I think so. I don't know Japan quite well. Yes, it was Kobe.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the thing with that earthquake was that it did a lot of damage to and Kobe is in the Kansai region, which is part, you know, like Kyoto and Osaka are part of like kind of the three major cities in the Kansai region. So Osaka was affected, but the epicenter of the earthquake was in Kobe. And then my first time in Japan was in 2000. So I had visited Kobe and I was like amazed at how modern Kobe looked compared to like Osaka, believe it or not. And other places in Japan I had been to. This is my first time ever living in Japan. So it was really interesting because of the earthquake, you know, gave the rebuilding of Kobe, allowed them to modernize Kobe as a city and infrastructure. So the roads were wider in Kobe, and it felt just a little, some of the buildings were much more new and had a more distinct Western feel for me, at least, at that time in 2000. So yeah, it's a pretty, it was something that like was a huge deal. Like, so yeah, I can see Baba like, you know, making a decision to like, okay, we got to do something special. So that might be, you know, to give it away.
I apologize.
The finish. No, that's okay. The finish of this match is a Broadway. It's a 60-minute time limit draw. So we'll talk about that and how like those go. But yeah, let's talk about the card before we get into the match itself. Opening this show was Masao Inoue taking on and defeating a young Kentaro Shiga in 12 minutes and 10 minutes and 12 seconds. In a tag team match, Mitsuo Momota, the son of Riki Dozan, and Rusher Kimura defeat Haruka Aigen and Mighty Inoue in 13 minutes, 30 seconds. Another tag team match, Abdullah the Butcher, still hanging out in All Japan, and Giant Kimala took on and defeated Masanobu Fuchi and Yoshinari Ogawa in 9 minutes, 12 seconds. In an All-Asia tag team title match, the Fantastics, yes, Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers, great tag team from the 80s, defeat, this is part of a tag team title league match, so it's a tournament, defeat Super Generation Army members Satoru Asako and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi in 12 minutes, 7 seconds. Singles match, Akira Taue defeats, oh my god, Tommy Dreamer in 4 minutes, 24 seconds. I wonder if he bled. Probably not. Tommy Dreamer in 1995 was not bleeding. That wouldn't happen until like ECW starts forming, right?
Yeah, he was just a happy-go-lucky babyface at this point.
In a six-man tag team match, Stan Hansen and the Can-Am Express of Danny Crawford and Doug Furness took on, defeated Johnny Ace, Johnny Smith, and Steve Williams. There you go. Six-man tag team match, Giant Baba, Jumbo Tsuruta, and Mitsuhara Misawa took on and defeated Jun Akiyama, Takao Omori, and Taman Honda in 15 minutes, 37 seconds. And that was our semi-main event. And this match is our main event, Triple Crown title, Toshiaki Kawada defending against Kenta Kobashi. And so he defeated Steve Williams in October for this title. And just so people know, he would lose the title to Stan Hansen on March 4th, 1995 in his second title defense. So he only got a V1. And we'll talk about the booking of Kawada in 1995 and actually most of the 90s. It's an interesting story in of itself. That is to say, Baba, he had a lot of heat with Baba. you know? Because I don't know exactly, I can't remember exactly when. He made the comment in the press, you know, hey, why aren't we doing all these interpromotionals like with UWFI groups like New Japan's doing? They're making all this money. Why don't we do that? Why are we just, you know, still doing our isolationist stuff? And, you know, so he's basically criticizing the philosophy of Giant Baba and how he runs how he runs all Japan, which you don't do. And if the timing is what I think it is, I could be completely wrong, but
it's not lost on me. He became the meat in a foreigner sandwich.
Yeah,
in terms of those reigns.
But the thing is like he never gets a good. Yeah, he never gets his win over Misawa.
Ever
for once, except for the match where he breaks his arm and only holds the title for less than a day. He has to vacate it as soon as he gets to the doctor and says, your arm's broken. You broke it 9 minutes into the match, but you still wrestle another 20 minutes. But there you go. And which Baba called the greatest match he'd ever seen before he died. He can't catch a break. Kawada, poor fella, can't catch a break. Partly because, like, you know, Baba, just in general, loved Misawa, obviously. He loved Kobashi. He kind of liked Kawada. You know, he recognized his talent. I don't think he ever loved Kawada.
Let's be honest. He tolerated Kawada.
Mm.
And that was something like last time I was on, I talked about the Hansen Kobashi match that we watched where Hansen hits Kobashi from the top rope outside in. And it was like the greatest thing I saw as one of my first All Japan matches. And the one thing, my friends, I was a big Misawa fan. One of my best friends, Chris, was a big Kawada fan. Another friend was, we each took a pillar accidentally. And so he would always get sick of the fact, he's like, every time we buy these tapes, Kawada never looks as strong as the other guys. Even Taue has better reins than this guy. And now as you talk about it, it makes sense. He's like, everybody hates Chris. Everyone tolerates Kawada.
The thing is the fans loved Kawada. They loved because of the way he's booked. He has the most compelling story to the fans because they recognize it, even though it's all kayfabe in the 90s, right? It's very guarded. Kayfabe is alive and well. You don't know if it's real or not. I'm sure there are people who are like, yeah, it's a work. I understand it. They're reading the dirt sheets. You know, they're getting Wade in the Torch over there. They're getting Dave and the Observer over there. They're reading all that shit. And they're like, okay, we're the ones who can read English fluently, like, oh, we're smart enough to the business. But for the most fans, they kayfabe is alive and well. But they on screen, the story that they're seeing with Kawada, right? Like struggling to get this win over Misawa, the ace of the company, obviously. It's also the story you tell with Kobashi before he becomes, you know, like in the mid to later 90s, he's doing the same story because they're both the ex-partners of Misawa, right? And then Jun Akiyama has a similar story, but his story is more aligned with Kobashi, you know, his ascent, especially in Noah.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, John and Wei go to the movies with a review of The Smashing Machine starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson based on the documentary around Mark Kerr. Plus, it's Rewind Away covering the 2017 documentary Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press. Also coming your way is reviews of Bound for Glory, King of Pro Wrestling, weekly editions of Collision Course, Post Pro Res with Karen Peterson and WH Park, and the XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free here at Post Wrestling Cafe.
But, you know, Kawada just never got the breaks that Kobashi did because not as marketable as Kobashi was. Baba didn't like care for the fact that this guy went to the press and said, yeah, I don't agree with the boss. Don't do that in Japan. Don't ever do that in Japan.
It's interesting to me that one of the other kind of weird legacies is the match you talk about, because when Baba dies, the last match he sees is that match. And everything that folks have taken after that match is how sick was the Gonzo bomb? Not holy crap, this guy tried to do one of his power moves with one arm. Like they took that as, oh, that's a move to put down Misawa. Not I'm trying to lift this 200 plus pound man up and the other arm doesn't work. So now we get a Kenny Omega storyline where he's like, or a Will Ospreay storyline where I gotta do this move. Well, it's like, you didn't break your arm first, Will. Like, I love Dangerous K. Like, if I had a chance to revote in my pillars, it would be Dangerous K or Kobashi, because I think Kobashi's story is another one. Coming back after retirement, dealing with illness, and then having just the fight, the ability. Like, with me with Kawada, I felt like, and you correct me if I'm wrong, he always was set up as the other guy in ways that I thought would have been Taue. Like, he didn't have the body like most of the guys. He was kind of like, even at his most svelte, he was still a little pudgy guy, but he got the job done. And I could see why he wanted to do some of that UWFI stuff, because he was such a good striker. But that wasn't really what Baba wanted. And I could imagine Baba just going, nope. Get this mother out of here. Like, I could just imagine one of Baba's like deep throated, like, and it's just like, you know, you effed up now, the Aaron. And I feel bad for Kawada, because I always felt as an outsider that didn't speak Japanese, that only I didn't read the, it's funny you mentioned it, I didn't read the Observer or the Torch or anything until I got to college. So everything I did or everything I watched was based on the kayfabe of what I saw on the screen. And the lesson I learned from Kawada until I started reading those newsletters was, this dude can't catch up. Like, even when he's in a match like this, where he's beaten the bejesus out of a challenger that has not done well in any other title match, he still can't beat him. Like, your first match, you can't beat the guy who's like this. This is like young, plucky Kobashi. Like, in 89, they were kind of like here. And then now I'm here as a champion. And this mother, I can't beat him. This made so many good memories when I got to rewatch this two or three times over the last weekend before we recorded.
So let's get into the match, and then more analysis will come out of like our talking about the match itself. You know, the crowd, this Osaka crowd, is firmly behind Kobashi because he is actually from the Kansai region. So he's kind of a hometown boy coming to back to, like, not necessarily from Osaka, but from the Kansai region. So a huge chance for his name. Kawada has his supporters, but they're not as vocal or as numerous as Kobashi's. This match starts off with a feeling out process, but, you know, Kawada early on gets pissed off with Kobashi for some reason, and they engage in this shoving match. I think maybe something like, I just heard from Baba that this is a Broadway? Fuck! It's your fault! Or something like that. Maybe something like that. But, you know, so they engage in this shoving match that turns into an exchange of each man's signature strikes. Kawada with kicks and Kobashi with chops and a lariat. Then they engage in a very, you know, even and back and forth test of strength, you know, where they kind of like pulling back on the guys. You're behind your opponent, you're pulling back on their arm. They get both, they each get that on their respective opponent and then reverse it, this and that. And at this point, you know, if you didn't know that this is a Broadway, this is a time limit draw, you're going to suss it out very quickly in the way these guys work. And I can tell now, you know, 30 plus years of watching professional wrestling, you know, 25 plus of being smart into the business, maybe less smart into the business and how things work in ring. I hope, like I can pretty much suss out. I think this is going to be to the time limit draw, whether it's 30 minutes or an hour, because you can tell when they are padding shit out that, okay, this is probably going the distance and there's probably not a definitive finish to this. So I kind of go, okay, this is where I think most people would suss it out if they didn't know the finish already. This is going Broadway, because a lot of what they're doing, and we'll talk about it as we keep going, is filler. It's padding the match out. What did you get that sense when you first watched this match, Rich?
Okay, so this was in a collection of, like, it was one of those tapes you buy off of eBay at the time, 5-star matches. So I didn't know anything about it other than it had been ranked 5-star. So I was like, okay, let's see what that means. And I was just in awe. I did not think it was going to go 60 minutes. I thought it was going to go like 48. Because I, at the way they were working, I had been used at that point, especially with American wrestling as my base. This seemed very much like a, in fact, watching it, the first thing that came to mind in my notes was this very much seemed like Lex Luger or Sting versus Ric Flair, where it's this guy trying to be the champion. And but unfortunately, in this case with Kawada, it's his first defense, not his 10th or 20th or something like that. And so it seemed very much like this guy's hanging on for dear life. And I did not know at the time Kobashi wouldn't get a singles win over Kawada until like 98 or 99 or something like that. So I didn't know the backstory of this dude's owned the other dude. And now he's champion and feels like he's too small. But I could tell by about the 38th minute that, like I said, I was like, okay, it's going to wrap up here. When he hit him with that throat chop, I thought, all right, this is it. And then it was like, oh, crap, they're still going. And then when you get all the way to, as you described, the rest of the match, I was like clapping like a seal by the end of this when I first saw this match, because we're sitting, you got to remember, or not remember, you weren't there. You met my friend Chris at WrestleMania. So there's six of us in a dorm room, like screaming at 10 o'clock at night. And our RA's like, hey guys, you got to keep it down. It's like, you don't understand. This dude is kicking this other dude and punching him in the throat. And the other guy just won't stay down. This is insane. And he's like, the RA looks, his name was, what was that guy? I think it was also Chris. And he's like, all right, whatever. And then we just went right back to it. So no, I didn't think it was going to go 60 minutes. I just knew whenever it ended, something awesome was going to happen and we were going to scream.
So this is a, like I said, they're doing this test of strength, spot sequence. And then, you know, Kawada decides, you know what? I'm bored. He German suplexes Kobashi, drops him on his head. And then, you know, from this point to Kawada decides, it's time to stop playing around and goes after Kobashi's already heavily braced up right knee. And this is the early part of the story. Kobashi is finally able, so he's just working it over. He kicks at it and he does like a sliding, like chop block kick to the back of it, and then just works it over. Kobashi is finally able to rally back with a spinning back kick and then a leaping leg drop to the back of Kawada's head, all with his bad right leg, by the way. But he's selling it. That's the great thing about Kobashi. He is still selling the leg, which, you know, he kind of forgets to do in the last 10 minutes of this match. But hey, that's all Japan Pro Wrestling. That's the King's Road. The adrenaline has been pumping, and it's miraculously, you know, fixed his bad knee. And can I just say, there is this spot where Kobashi simply chops Kawada in the back of the neck, right here, right? And Kawada sells it Kawada sells it like Kobashi hit him with the cattle prod from Jacques Rougeau. You know what I mean? It's just, he just crumbles. it's amazing.
I thought it was like Chigurh's gun in No Country for Old Men, just like bam. You remember that movie?
Yeah. With
the cattle gun.
Harvey Bardem.
Yeah, just bam. That's what I felt. Because it hit him. And sadly, quick aside, we'll get back to the match. I had a player get hit in the neck on Saturday after I was starting this match during a JV game. And it was the same thing. So for me in real life, seeing it happen, and he's fine. The kid's fine. But it was a scary moment because I was like, this is literally like what happened. Because it wasn't like a kid hit him hard. It was just like half a forearm to the back of the neck. And he just he couldn't move his arms and legs. And so I was like, Jesus, maybe he did get like hit him in the right on the button. But they kept going. And I am thoroughly impressed 30 some odd years later with the simplicity of some of the stuff they did in this match.
By the way, I doing my research, like I went to Cage Match and right, reading the comments in there and about this match, a lot of people hate the commentary. Like, but the funny thing is like, I think most of you don't even speak Japanese. So I don't know. What are you complaining about? They're complaining about like how Baba and I think it's Tarzan Goto are the commentators listed on Cage Match for this match, for this show, are like, they just don't seem like they care. So my I'm listening to it, like with that in mind, I'm like trying to guess, oh, I think this commentary is ADR. I don't think they recorded it. Like, I don't think it's from the actual show. Maybe for whatever reason, because if you notice, like the sound, sound difference if it's being recorded live is different in this match. It sounds like the crowd is muted whenever these guys are talking.
Yeah.
You know? So I feel like, oh, it's eight. They might have done it ADR. That's my guess. Correct.
And that might have been an issue with like travel or post earthquake, like just logistics. Because Baba did wrestle the match before, right? Like, so you don't want to hear him like,
like, he's been toweled off by a young boy, and you know, so he's all good. He's gotten his, you know, shoulder rub from a young boy. It's okay. By the way, when I say young boy, I mean a trainee.
Yeah. Of course, I get it. That's why I tried to say foreigner and not like the other word the folks would say back in the day with the G word. I think that's not allowed anymore.
Say gaikokujin. That just means foreign person. Yeah, okay. Gaikokujin is fine. Gaijin is, it's not so much anymore.
It's more pejorative, more like.
Yeah, it's a pejorative. Yeah, it's always been a pejorative, but people just adopted it and like with ignorance, the word I feel.
Yeah.
No, they just did it with ignorance. Oh, that's what they call us over here. Gaijin. Okay, cool. No, it's. Anyways. Kawada has a barrage of chops and elbows for Kobashi in the corners and then rams his head into two turnbuckles. This is just like, you know what? You're Baba's boy. I'm going to beat the piss out of you in this match. Kawada looks like he's going for a brainbuster, but Kobashi blocks it and hits a vertical suplex. I really appreciate the vertical suplex more as I've gotten older, as like, you know what? That would really suck.
Yeah.
To be hit, to be hoisted up in the air, held for like 1 or 2 seconds, and then fall back and just land on your back. That would really suck. Like, I think more than like a side suplex or German suplex, I think vertical suplexes are really, really underrated as something that's going to do a lot of damage to you. Like body slams. Body slams. I appreciate a body slam more than ever.
Listen. Those are two moves, the suplex and the body slam, more than anything that from what wrestlers have told me over the years, like when you take time off, that's your welcome back to getting your callus to getting dropped on your back. Like, cause you can't, like you could redistribute the weight all you want. It's still going to suck. Like you said, with a German suplex, you can kind of like roll with it and kind of deal with it. But when you just get dropped, as a dude who tore his Achilles, like I would not want in any world to be up on a ladder at like that high and then all of a sudden just do a flop and land on my back. So a suplex would be even worse. And I like the fact at this point that they fought for the suplex. It wasn't just like they are fighting tooth and nail for every freaking move in this match, and I love it.
Yeah, it's unlike American wrestling, especially I feel in the 90s, where it's just like, yeah, I'm just gonna body slam you. I'm just gonna, there's no struggle, like because you're just used to watching jobber matches on television, right? You know, it's unless you're getting every pay-per-view, you're not really seeing the struggle. You're just seeing guys getting tossed, especially if you're watching Steiner matches, you know, in the WCW, people just getting tossed around. There's no struggle. You don't struggle against, you know, the Steiner brothers or the Road Warriors or whoever, right? If you're a jobber, if you did. You know, but you got a receipt coming. You're gonna get shot on. Anyways, Kobashi rams Kawada's heads into several trump buckles in retaliation, but Kawada is hardly fazed by them, and then he hits a really nice vertical drop kick on Kawada. Just showing, you know, this dude is pretty big. I don't know about his center of gravity or, you know, but he got up high. He is a very agile man for a guy like with his physique.
Oh, yeah. For me, Kawada's always, and that's why I liked when him and Eddie had a conversation in terms of like body style, wrestling style. And he's like, don't wrestle like me. Your body won't like you when you're older. This is a sign. Like you mentioned with the suplex, him jumping up that high with a drop kick, there's no way to help yourself when you're landing.
No, You just try to kind of break your fall as best as possible. Kobashi no-sells some chops to the chest, and so Kawada chops him in the throat. And Kobashi looks like he's going to die of asphyxiation at this point. This I don't know if this is the exact spot, because there's actually a couple of shots to the throat in this match, you know, amazingly. But that's probably the first one of significance in this match, where it's just like, wow, like Kobashi, poor Kobashi looks like he's just like gonna like die because he can't breathe anymore.
A lot of this match is Kawada, like in the middle of the match, going from pro wrestler to just dick senior. Like, you're a freshman. Bam. Like, he did everything but kick him in the junk in this match. Like, chin lock, kick you in the face. Like, why? There's like the escalation in terms of the way Kawada attacks Kobashi in this match is hilarious.
Kawada follows up by attacking Kobashi on the floor, including body slamming him on the mats on the outside, and then stomping on him by jumping from the apron to a prone Kobashi who's on the floor. That's got to suck. That's like the coup de grace before there was the coup de grace. And let me tell you something. Toshiaki Kawada in 1995 is a lot heavier than Finn Balor has ever been in his entire career.
Yeah. He's like two Finn Balors and his Hornswoggle.
That's right. Kawada continues the same sequence of assault, but this time in the ring. So he does the same like body slam, jumps from the second turnbuckle to stomps on for Kobashi. Kawada applies a really lame looking sleeper hold that Kobashi, you know, thankfully gets out of by grabbing the ropes probably quicker than he might normally if it's actually applied pretty well. One of the few sloppy things that Kawada did in this match. Otherwise, great performance, but that just wanted to point that out.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Kawada hits this weird powerbomb where he hoists Kobashi up, right? And then just throws him to the crowd. He just tosses him.
It's like he's the last ride before the last ride. So
that's right.
Kawada is the future, is what we're saying.
It basically, well, I mean, it is without a doubt that most people in America started stealing moves from either New Japan Juniors or All Japan Heavyweights from this time period. And then we continue in Pro Wrestling Noah, right? Like, I don't know how many people have stolen everything fucking Naomichi Marufuji has ever invented in the ring. All right. I'm talking to you, Chris Jericho. Fucking move thief. But anyways, yeah, so he then hits a backdrop suplex but can't follow up. This is great. He can't follow up when he hits this backdrop suplex on Kobashi. Kawada can't follow up because he's fucking tired. He's like me, like hour four into All Out, you know what I mean? So I love that fact that, like, you know, you're playing on this idea that, you know, like, doing the moves, you know, like being in this fight. I think we're like 30 minutes in by now, Rich. Like, it's tiring. God, man, this is a brutal match. Like, if you really think about, like, go beyond, like, that's cool. Oh, he hit him really hard. Well, this is taking a toll on the people doing the moves as much as it is people taking the moves.
This is like CrossFit times a billion. Because it's not, like you're saying, it's not aerobic where you're just running around. It's anaerobic. Like, you have to maintain this. It isn't the in any other event. Like, you think about 80s wrestling in the United States, where it's like these methodical flare matches. You're not doing that as 200 pound plusers while also just whooping the tar out of each other.
Kawada wants to go for another powerbomb, but Kobashi herks him over his head and the top rope and dumps Kawada to the floor. Kawada doesn't stay down for too long and quickly regains control of the match again. And this is, without a doubt, the point where, you know, they're going Broadway, because there is not a long control sequence by either man in this match. It is pretty even. Like, there's a point where maybe Kobashi keeps the advantage and works over Kawada for like 5 minutes. Okay, but after that 5 minutes, it's now Kawada's turn. And after that 5 minutes, it's Kobashi's turn. There's a lot of like back and forth. Whereas in like a regular, like let's say 30-minute match, Kobashi would have a long extended control sequence, maybe 10 minutes, 7 to 10 minutes, maybe, right? And then Kawada would get his comeback, and then Kawada would, you know, Kobashi would cut him off. As a challenger, Kobashi would cut him off, go for his hope spots, and then you get to the finish. We do not see that in 30 minutes into this match. We are seeing, oh, they're still vying for control of this match. It's really, oh, okay, that's a sign of a Broadway match going Broadway. Kobashi tries for a top rope shoulder tackle, one of his signature moves, but Kawada catches him with the jumping high kick.
Bang.
And injures his own left leg in the process. Great. This is what you got to say about the pillars. Any of them, anyone who works in this company for the most part, my God, they are so smart as to like, man, this is where I got to sell. Okay, I hurt my leg doing this move. Yeah. Probably did it, but he's, you know what? I hurt my leg. You know, Masao would be like hitting someone with an elbow. And he's like, you know, when I hit this elbow, that's when I hurt my arm doing it. You know, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and he screamed, and this is the point in the match where, like, I needed Samuel Jackson to take over as the external monologue for Kawada, because I feel like he was just like, mother, I should have beaten this guy by now. And I think that's the story of this part. He's getting so frustrated that this is a guy he thought, because you saw the disrespect. He has been an absolute dick this entire match, and he is dumbfounded that he has not beaten Kobashi by now.
So Kobashi, you know, sees an opening. He smells blood in the water. He low drop kicks the left knee, and Kawada looks like he got shot there. Like, you're talking about the Harvey Bardem's shotgun thing, you know, from No Country for Old Men. That's what he got. That's what Kawada got shot with right there from this low drop kick. The left knee is now Kobashi's focal point. So we went from the early points of this match where, you know, the right knee of Kobashi is Kawada's focal point. Now, about halfway through this match, the left knee of Kobashi is now Kawada's focal point. But, you know, just to spoil it again, this does not play into the finish at all. it's fine. I don't complain about these things, you know, anymore.
I'm fine
because like, you know, it's you can just make the argument. It's adrenaline, like it's pumping through your veins. It's, you're not feeling the pain you did in whatever body part you were selling earlier on. And I don't get, like, I'm not like a selling fetishist in terms of like, you forgot to work to sell this body part, you know, 20 minutes before the match finished. Oh, you know, I don't do that anymore. I used to, maybe like in my 20s, I might have been a bit more OCD about it. Not anymore. So it's Kobashi's focal point, to the point where he applies an incredibly rare figure four leg lock on Kawada. And I'm like, whoa, you never see anyone in Japanese wrestling outside of Jushin Thunder Liger, because he was a huge Ric Flair mark, apply the figure four leg lock in Japanese wrestling, is particularly, I feel, in the 90s All Japan.
Mm-hmm. I loved it because it became, as anyone who knows myself and WH outside of Puteres, we're big Star Wars fans. And this became Scooch Wars because it was just like, I'm going this way. Yeah. I'm going that way. And I was just getting clapping like a seal in my bedroom, and my son was like, what are you watching? And I was like, some awesome stuff Mr. WH sent me. And he looked and he's like, those dudes are sweaty, and left. Never been more disappointed.
He knows his favorites in the, you know, WWE are all sweaty too, right?
I think he hasn't seen work like this. Like, this is like, these dudes are working boots. Like, I want to show him kind of like a speed run of the pillars just to see who he'll adopt. It's like, you got to pick one.
Yeah. I mean, I think you just start him with, you know, Saruta Gun versus Super Generation Army, six mans. So then he gets a flavor for Jumbo. You can either get a flavor for Jumbo, I feel, before you do a deep dive into the pillars at their peak. Where am I in my notes? So yeah, you're talking about the Beautiful. Scooching. They're like going back, like Kobashi's trying to get to the ropes. He's scooching, like, you know, as you can imagine what the word scooching, the physical action of that is. But Kobashi just decides, while Sita drags him back into the center of the ring, while still always keeping the figure four applied. It's quite amazing, actually. So he, all the while still playing the figure four. So yes, Kawada's in the figure four. He's trying to escape. Kobashi pulls him back. Kawada finally escapes, but probably wishes he hadn't, as Kobashi on the outside of the ring rams Kawada. So they're out on the outside now. He lifts him up, rams him knee first into the timekeeper's table. He breaks it. Very rare in Japan in the 90s, especially in all Japan. This is not FMW, you know, so there's not a lot of plunder breaking or anything like that. Kobashi goes for the Texas Cloverleaf before DiMalenko made it popular in WCW. But Kawada gets to the ropes really quickly, but Kobashi drags him back to the center for another Cloverleaf. I like these things, these kinds of sequences where you don't give up on the hold just because they get to the ropes. You just drag them back and you put it back on. I like that he doesn't decide, I'm going to go for a single leg crab now. I'm going to Lance Storm this. I'm going to go for a single leg crab now. But he goes back for the Clover, because that's the move he you know, might have been taught it, because Joe and Dean Malenko both worked extensively in All Japan when Kobashi was a young boy.
Excellent point, my friend.
Kawada tries for an enziguri, but Kobashi's head, to Kobashi's head, but Kobashi blocks it. Unfortunately, he's not able to block Kawada's brilliant kick to his bad knee. So he just decides, hey, I haven't touched this bad knee in a while for like 15 minutes. Kicks right at it. Kawada kicks Kobashi in the back and chops his chest, all the while Kobashi is sitting down. So he's just helpless, defenseless, sitting in a prone sitting position, and Kobashi's, you know, chopping his back, kicking him in the chest. I love it. I love when Kobashi just decides, I'm going to try to destroy you with my strikes.
And I love the fact that at this point, Kawada realizes he's in for a fight. Kobashi is refusing to be demoralized, and they're just tired pandas. Like, they are just doing the most. That's what I said at the beginning. They're doing the most basic things to injure each other and then get space to breathe and try to like recover.
We see a real back and forth exchange between the two until Kobashi hits this desperation lariat to Kawada. This really fires up the crowd. You know, they're pretty much into this match the whole time, but this really fires them up, and they are firmly behind Kobashi now. And this gives him the strength, this fan support gives him the strength to pick up Kawada and powerbomb him. Oh my God. I think we're like into like 40 minutes into this match of this guy's just like going all out. Kawada is so exhausted that he, you know, he staggers and falls on his butt. And this is, believe it or not, this is the first time I noticed anyone going for a pin attempt in this match. Yeah. Kobashi goes for the pinfall attempt, but Kawada kicks out. And there is this beautiful exchange of a Kawada backchop to Kobashi's face. He like spins and backchops him to his face, and then Kobashi just explodes out of the corner. Like, so he staggers back, and then he just runs out of the corner and hits an awesome drop kick to Kawada. There's big Kobashi chance now. Kawada ducks a lariat, but Kobashi hits a jumping bulldog, follows up with a leg drop to the back of Kawada's neck. It's gotta suck to be these guys' necks, you know, Rich?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at this point, this is where you're the young boys with the ice packs are filling them up furiously, getting ready for the finish.
Kobashi tries for his signature moonsault, but Kawada rolls out of the way. There's another great chop exchange that ensues between them, and Kawada once again chops Kobashi in the throat. He really hates Kobashi's throat, maybe because, like, you know both these guys are really good singers.
I did not know that.
Yeah, if you watch, there's a I think you can find on YouTube, Kobashi Misawa and Kawada singing and dancing. Mm-hmm. It's a little embarrassing, to be quite honest with you, but you know, Misawa's okay. Kobashi's not bad. I'll say this: Kobashi's not bad. Kawada is a fucking awesome singer. One of his gimmicks and hustle, singing.
Hey, songbird of his generation.
Amazing. You wouldn't believe to hear like the dulcet tones,
especially with the teeth missing.
Yeah. coming out of Kawada's mouth, like, holy shit, this guy's, I go to karaoke any day with Toshiaki Kawada, man. Let's see. Kawada, so I think that's why he's trying to chop and throw. He's like, no one's coming after my title as best singer in this fucking company. Kawada Laird is blocked by Kobashi, but then Kawada hits a Gamangiri, one of his signature moves. I go crazy every time I see him jump up and kick someone in the face. Kobashi kicks out of the jackknife, folding powerbomb into a pin, and this crowd is going insane. But Kawada doesn't care and drops him on his head with a backdrop suplex. He goes, you love this guy? Well, fuck you. I'm going to drop him on his head. That's right. That's what he's saying. I know the body language. I've watched so many of these guys' matches. I know what they're thinking when they do some of these moves, Rich.
Listen, it makes a lot of sense, because when you talk about the next part of the sequence, that part, in my opinion, is payback for an earlier part we didn't talk about. But in the first 7 minutes of the match, Kobashi, as a little punk freshman would to a senior, slaps on a stretch plump. The audacity?
Yes. You know, so this is the point, actually, now in this match, that Kawada busts out one of his signature moves that he does in honor of Plum Mariko, a Joshi who invented this move, who sadly passed away very early, and didn't really hit, you know, but she you know, Plum Mariko did get accolades for creating one of my favorite finishing maneuvers, the stretch plum. So Kawada busts out the stretch plum and really twerks on Kobashi, but it's not enough to get the pin. Kawada puts the stretch plum once again, but still Kobashi won't stay down. Pardon me. Kobashi ducks out of an enziguri attempt, hits the ropes, and hits Kawada with a beautiful flying elbow. So I think he's kind of like, you know, he's like, I'm going to maybe try something from a guy who has beaten Kawada pretty much every time, and that's the Misawa. So he does a Misawa move here. I love when people hit moves you don't normally see from them, just because I think it adds variety, and it's like, oh, it keeps you guessing as a fan, right? As a fan, it makes you think, okay, they're not just hitting their same old boring moves. You got to sometimes change it up to actually try to win a match.
Yeah, and I like the fact that Kawada is reapplying the stretch plum, reapplying it. He's like, screw you, buddy. Kobashi is like flailing and trying to pin him. And that elbow, once they went down, the crowd lost their minds.
Kobashi then goes for his rolling Oklahoma rolls. Like, he just spins all over the ring doing the Oklahoma roll to try to dizzy out Kawada, but it's not enough to keep him down for the three count. Kobashi even tries a giant Baba dropping lariat, but again, Kawada won't stay down. Kobashi hits his own jackknife powerbomb into a bridge, one of his signature moves. So both these guys do like a variation of the jackknife powerbomb, which is not, by the way, not the Kevin Nash version. Kevin Nash just like calls it the jackknife because, you know, Diesel, he's a truck, right? But there's not, these aren't jackknives, because good luck trying to get fucking Kevin Nash to do a fucking bridge.
Soul power bomb, just like,
yeah, you know, he's like just up, down, finger on the chest. That's it. That's Kevin Nash style power bomb pinning combination. Anyways, hey, no offense to Kevin Nash. Honestly, political views, I 100% agree with that dude. And then there's another moonsault from Kobashi, but Kawada kicks out of that. At this point, if you didn't know, you know, again, this was going Broadway, and you could probably, you know, if you didn't know by this point, you probably could guess at this point. Kawada blocks some suplex attempts, backspin chops, and rolling kicks Kobashi twice. I love when he does the forward rolling kick, especially when he catches them right in the, like, their temple or something like that. Yeah. The accuracy this man has with with this move is quite uncanny.
Love it.
But he still can't. He does this twice to Kobashi, but he still can't pin him. There's a sick looking dragon suplex that dumps Kobashi on his neck, but still not enough to keep Kobashi down. You know, it's, you know, Kobashi hits a desperate German suplex pin, and Kawada kicks out of that. This is a point where, like, you know, I gotta throw some accolades towards our referee, the legendary Kyohei Wada, a man I have seen smoke in the smoking room of Cork and Hall at many an All Japan show, every intermission, that man at the age of his late 60s, early 70s, maybe, goes to Cork and Hall's smoking room and smokes at least three cigarettes with the fans.
That's awesome.
When I was a smoker, I'd be in there. And I'd be like, holy fucking shit. There's Kyohei Wada standing 2 feet away from me having a cigarette. And like, same as me. Now I don't smoke anymore. Don't start. I don't recommend it. Don't start. You know, like if I could change something and go back to when I was 18 years old, smack myself and say, don't start. That being said, haven't touched a cigarette in almost like 6 years. So there you go. Where am I in my notes? So Wada's ref. Yeah. He just hits that one, two, and then just, I love the way he does like a near fall. He is so awesome. He's so awesome. Like, he's probably my favorite ref of all time. All time. I don't think anyone comes close to like the way he officiates and keeps control of the match and like tries to sell like the high stakes of a match, if you will. So there's another drop to Kobashi's head, and he immediately just scrambles to the I love this. He just starts going, like, you know, he's going to pin me. I got to just out of desperation.
Autopilot.
You know, he just goes for the ropes, and just Kawada's chasing him, and he's just trying to stay out of Kawada's hands. Like, literally, he's grabbing the ropes. He's pulling along the ropes and, crawling on his knees to keep away from Kawada grabbing him and trying to pin him because he knows he's done if that happens. But Kawada does catch him, hits another GR and suplex, and the same thing. Kobashi just immediately scrambles away from him. This might be my favorite sequence in this match.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where, again, this is, if anything, if I'm trying to tell the true story of Toshiaki Kawada, it's that in this case, Kobashi is the freshman that did all these things. And when it's time for me to give him his comeuppance, he's grabbing a school teacher. And in this case, the school teacher is that bottom rope. That sucker is getting held on to like it is the last thing on earth that exists. And he will not give it up. And he's like, I won't beat you, but I'm not going to lose either. At this point, he's playing for a draw. And I've never seen that in a wrestling match, the way they play it out like this. And since it's a pale comparison.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, John and Wei go to the movies with a review of The Smashing Machine, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, based on the documentary around Mark Kerr. Plus, it's Rewind Away, covering the 2017 documentary Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press. Also coming your way is reviews of Bound for Glory, King of Pro Wrestling, weekly editions of Collision Course, Post Pro Res with Karen Peterson and W.H. Park, and the XL editions of Rewind of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free here at Post Wrestling Cafe.
So Kawada does catch him, and then he tries for a final powerbomb, but the ring announcer has announced like 5 minutes left in this match, you know, like 30 minutes, like, you know, he's been announcing the time markers in this match. So, you know, the fans are realizing, okay, time is running out. Kawada tries for a final powerbomb, and as time ticks away, he can't get it on, and the bell rings. The 60 minute time limit has been hit. This is a draw. And my big takeaway as far as this finish goes is that as far as a Broadway finish, this is a pretty good one. If I could change it, I would have had booked it to be the bell ringing as Kobashi is scrambling, running away from Kobashi, like, you know, out of desperation. I think that would have been way more dramatic. And it would have just been like, I think just made him like the desperation of like, and make Kawada look stronger. Not necessarily making Kobashi look weaker, but it would have definitely made Kawada look stronger in this match, I feel.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you 1,000%.
In a great show of sportsmanship, Kawada pulls Kobashi up, and they both raise each other's hands to show respect for their respective, you know, let's say, fighting spirits. Fighting spirits. Mm-hmm. They know that, you know, they, I think, legitimate respect from one another for the efforts both put into this match to make it something that, you know, like a lot of people really like. I know, you know, Dave gave this a 5-star rating in the Observer. I believe it's like, it has a pretty high rating over at Cage Match. Let me see. Who are we with? Toshiaki Kawada. Let's see. Matches. Where is he? Sorry. Let's see. So he... Where is this? What's the rating on this? It's a 8.31 based on 63 votes over at Cage Match, which is pretty good. It's a pretty good rating from the Cage Match inmates. Is that what they're called? The inmates over at Cage Match. So it gets high rating. What would you give you? What rating do you give it out of five? We don't break the scale here. It's a 5-star rating as our peak. What do you give it, Rich?
Hey, only you will give me, because I absolutely, at the torch, I refuse to give star ratings anymore. I'm sick of them. I'll give it 5.
Okay.
This is magnificent. This is still like, and that's what annoys me about modern day wrestling. This is still a match I need on a tape or on a YouTube playlist or whatever you want to call it. If I want to show someone what pro wrestling is, this match is one of the matches I'm going to show them.
So I give it a 4.5. Just because I can tell, like, when it's going to be a Broadway. Like, yes, I know the finish of this match even before I started watching it again, but I can tell. I can tell, like, oh, they're working it for a time limit draw, because normally the way it's paced and the way these guys are working, they wouldn't normally do it like this. But that being said, the work is still exemplary. But, like, I don't like to be able to smell the finish right away. Any match, whether it's a who's winning or if it's going to be a draw, whatever. That's my only critique of it. But within that framework that I'm critiquing, the work is excellent. Like, a lot of the stuff that they do, which is like kind of going out of their sandbox. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, both these guys go out of their sandbox to like incorporate moves that they normally wouldn't. Was great to see. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. I loved the desperation for both these guys, especially Kobashi. He knows he's done, like, and he's just trying to run away from Kawada, and, you know, trying to survive, not run away, but try to survive to keep in the match, because he does not want to lose to Kawada here. But yeah, Kawada, his booking. So he only gets this one. He doesn't even get this. He doesn't even get a V1. Really, it's a draw. And then, you know, he doesn't win the Triple Crown again until, let me just go back here. He doesn't win the Triple Crown until 1998. And then it's not even against Misawa. Wait, no, it is against... it is against Misawa. He defeats Misawa. This is a Tokyo Dome match, I think. Yes, and then Kobashi defeats him. This is the first Tokyo Dome match. And then he doesn't get the belt again until a year later. And this is a famous one against Misawa. Let me see. This is like less than a day. He beats Misawa. This is the famous one where he breaks his arm. And then he has to vacate it because he breaks his arm, and then he doesn't get until after the Exodus. He's like the go-to guy, of course, with the Triple Crown after Tenryu. So he will win it two more times. He's a 5-time Triple Crown champion. He wins it 5 more times. His last time, his 5th time, is 529 days long. And let's see how many defenses. He beats Otani, Shinjiro Otani, in the tournament final. He defeats Don Fry, Tenryu, Shinya Hashimoto, Mick Foley at Hustle 3, Jamal, aka Umaga, Takao Omori, Osamu Nishimura, Tai Okeya, Hiroyoshi Tenza, which is an awesome match.
Mm-hmm.
Might be the best match of this reign. Kensuke Sasaki might be the second best match of this reign. And then he loses and puts over the new ace of All Japan at the time, Satoshi Kojima, which might be the greatest match of Satoshi Kojima's career ever, you know. But Kawada just can't catch the breaks, but that's okay. We love Kawada. Most people who listen to this show, most people in the wrestling business, I feel, who are familiar with the King's Road, love Toshiaki Kawada. They love them some like Dangerous K, some black and yellow attack. You know what I mean? The colors of Kawada. But yeah,
I feel like if they had done and listened to him and wanted to make more money here in Pittsburgh, because black and gold is the color, I feel like Pittsburgh would have been a big Kawada town.
But you know what? You guys won an Emmy, right?
Oh, for the Pit. Yeah. Like 10% of it's filmed here. The rest of it's in Hollywood. They do the external shots. But I think it's really cool that they consulted with some of the doctors and stuff around here.
So there you go. Yeah. Well, I think that brings us to the close of this show. I'm not sure when this is going to be released.
Okay.
Hopefully soon. Maybe in time for, I don't think in time for my actual birthday, which is like later on this week as of this recording, but probably too late to schedule in. Maybe soon. But anyways, this is episode 49.
Birthday gift.
Huh? Yeah, come on, guys. Anyways, this is episode 49. Episode 50 will be a special, hopefully I'm going to try to release that on like the anniversary of the match. I won't tell you what it is for that. I'll tell you off air, but I won't tell the fans. The listeners can find out when we announce it. But yeah. Yeah, but you know what? Rich, thank you as always also for your continued support of projects we work on together.
Listen, Melissa, okay, I'm going to say this just because you mentioned that. We're going to be in Toronto for my son's hockey tournament in December. And she's like on the phone with me. Wouldn't it be cool if you and WH do a podcast together in the same room? I was like, that's actually logistically harder because then we got to figure out cameras and microphones and all that.
We can't unless John Pollock like lets us use the studio.
Right. But she was like, no. What we'll do is Trey and I will be your cameramen, and then some of the hockey players could have like boom mics. I was like, nope, this isn't. Someone's not going to pay attention. Then they're going to drop the boom mic or they're going to.
I don't want
to. And then Trey's like, I'm number one cameraman. I was like, are you? I feel like you're going to be wearing your merch and it's just going to be the camera pointed at yourself.
Yeah, no, I don't want an audience.
That's it.
Oddly, as odd as that might be to say for something that's going to be on YouTube and, you know, I don't want an audience in studio. Listen, it's logistically possible if we can book the Joe Post studio. Yeah, the Joe Post studios. Maybe he'll let us use them. I don't know. We'd have to talk. You know what? I let you work out the logistics of that with John if you want to do that. I let you, since it's your wife's idea, you can work out logistics with him about that. He's a very amiable human being and a good friend.
Hey, John, so, can you have like 30 hockey players take over your house?
No. The hockey players aren't coming over. It would just be you, me, and probably, you know, Melissa and Trey hanging out. But
yeah, Melissa will probably like accidentally like walk into the Joe Post studios. Like, oh, what's this? What's going on in here, guys? Like, you set this up. Don't go play.
Trey can play, you know, street hockey with John's kids, you know.
Mm-hmm. The language of the people.
There you go. I don't know if his kids play hockey. His son. I don't know if his son likes baseball. I know that for a fact. I don't know if his son likes hockey or not.
Blue Jays fan, I'm assuming.
They go to Jays games. I think he likes Jays games. I think I asked, last time I saw him in person, I think I asked his son, I was like, hey, you like Blue Jays, right? He's like, yep.
So, yeah, this is the long and winding base runner.
That's right. There you go. But what do you got happening in your other realms? Like we are going to have a project coming out soon of DCU later. We're going to review Peacemaker season 2. I get to talk to you off air because I've not even watched a single episode of this. I'm going to have to binge this thing.
It's good. I stopped 2 episodes ago just because life had gotten out of hand at my day job and coaching, but it's been really good so far this season. And we also have a request from Nate pop in if sure. you are agreeable.
Oh, of course.
Sure. Because he absolutely loves this season. And I just showed up on an episode of it was a live watch of WrestlePalooza. And I'll be on upcoming episode of October for the Nubian Wrestling Advocates.
Oh, so I hope you have 17 hours to spare.
No. I always go in for a hard hour and then I tap out. Again, I'm getting my Kawada on. I get my kicks in. I do my stuff and then I get out. But yeah, so I got that going on. As always, over at the Torch, I have everything with Rich and Wade. This week we did a simulcast. Whenever this comes out, that might have just been an episode. I don't know. Bottom line is, Wade and I talk about wrestling. A lot of times I talk about other stuff too to kind of fill the gap. Like, for instance, the importance of realizing you don't want one company owning all of your news networks. That gets really, really dark. Or despite us with MCU later, looking at the Marvel Cinematic Universe and sometimes over at the Torch doing This Is the Way. If you're a multinational company, maybe you shouldn't just, you know, take an L like the way Disney did the last week.
Mm.
But that's it for me. As always, you can follow me on Blue Sky if you want, Rich Fan, or that's about it. Don't look for me anywhere else. It gets weird.
I have some movie reviews I did with Al, the movie lion, over at Real Digital. Maybe Rich is going to possibly be a guest on Al the Movie Lion's movie reviews in the future. I had a good time. I can't tell you what movies I reviewed. I reviewed three movies, and each episode will each review will be part of a themed episode, I feel, of the show. I think that's how Al the anamorphic cartoon lion explained it to me. Once you see this, you'll know what I'm talking about. Once you actually see it's on YouTube. A bunch of episodes are already out. Al the Movie Lion from Real, R-E-E-L Digital. Way's Lego movie review is up, actually. Ooh. As part of the episode that's all about toy movies.
Okay.
I think Way reviews Lego. Someone else reviews the Transformers, the first Transformers movie by Michael Bay, and someone else reviews the Barbie movie with Margot Robbie. So
nice.
Mine has three, each film is really different. Mm-hmm. Check that out. Real Digital, check out their YouTube page and subscribe. Al, the Movie Lion. Look that up on YouTube. Subscribe to it. Neil Flanagan's been on the show.
Wade's say no
on the
more.
Show. I think Nate Milton's going to be on the show. A lot of Post people, because Al is a big fan of Post wrestling.
Okay, Al.
So beyond that, of course, coming up always every month, Post Perez with the Empress Karen Peterson. I've got a lot of thoughts about things that have been happening. The N1 and NOAH, the return of Yuma Anzai to All Japan, the return of Naoya Nomura to All Japan. And finally, you know, I'm dating this show, but finally, fucking Jun Saito's lost Triple Crown. Thank God the nightmare is over. Anyways, see, on that note, we're gonna take our leave. Check out episode 50 in the future with a special guest talking about special match on its hopefully on its anniversary. And until next time, we'll see you later. Let me hit this closing music. I should hit it before, but here it is. Until next time, thanks everyone for listening. Support the get the shirt. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.